Alright, we are going to entertain the public safety for the purpose of reviewing the Nassau County's IMA, and also we'll have Commissioner Longworth regarding mobile command units. Those are the first two items we'll have, so...
Okay, Mr. Chairman, thank you. So we'll do the IMA with Nassau County first. We have Commissioner.
And I think Commissioner from Lazar Richards is here too, Dr. Asher.
Good morning.
Good morning, Commissioner Longworth.
Good morning. I have with me this morning Captain Calabrese from the Technical Division, who's familiar with the IMA.
Captain, welcome.
Good morning.
Okay, so the first item before budget and public safety is an IMA with the County of Nassau, where Westchester County, through its Department of Laboratories and Research, will provide trace evidence analysis for the Nassau County Crime Lab. Captain, you want to tell us why we're going to do this?
At the request of Nassau County, they're in need for their cases that are immediately going to trial. Based on the inability of their lab due to certification problems, they're unable to process the evidence that they've already recovered that they're going to need for trial. They've reached out to us, being one of the few accredited labs in the state of New York that will have the ability to help them. And that's why we're here today, and to do the analysis on the cases that they will have that will be coming up for trial in the very near future.
Okay, well, let me ask you a couple of questions. First, so as we understand that the Nassau lab has been closed, so they're in need of these services. In terms of the capabilities of our lab to take on this work, in addition to all the other work it's had and it's budgeted for to do, in terms of personnel and capabilities, was it your understanding that the lab can take on this work without any impact to its ongoing work?
Oh, it absolutely would be impact, but that impact would result in extra hours being worked by the personnel in our lab, and that those extra hours would be compensated fully by the agreement that you have from Nassau County. The regular, I'll call it the regular hours, the regular tours that our people work in our forensic investigation unit now is pretty much completely full with the work that we have already. So this would be additional work. The lifts to be able to comply to what they need for the trial is not extremely heavy, and we believe that we can do that without impacting the unit.
Will the labs and research department have to hire any additional personnel? Will it be the same personnel, just working more hours?
Yes, if I could just interject myself.
Sure, Commissioner, go right ahead.
Two separate IMAs that are in play with regard to Nassau County. The one relates to labs and research, which Dr. Asher is here prepared to speak with regard to. There's a second IMA between the Department of Public Safety in Nassau County that relates to ballistics and fingerprint analysis.
I said, okay, but now is that IMA before us already?
Yes.
Yeah, it is.
No.
Where is it?
4262.
Oh, there's the IMA with labs and research, but the IMA with the Department of Public Safety for ballistics. I don't know if...
Isn't this it?
No, there's the... No, Bernice, I think that's... I think the IMA...
Okay.
Right, am I missing something? Is it only one... It's only one IMA?
I may not have reached yet.
Okay. Well, it's good to know. So there... So we will then get to the IMA with the Department of Public Safety, because I do not believe that is in front of us today, Commissioner. As I see it, the IMA we do have in front of us. But we'll ask the same question, so you can listen in. It'll be the same concerns, from both from a public safety point of view and a budgetary point of view. You know, our personnel and the work we're doing on behalf of the people of Westchester County, to what extent might that be impacted? Might your department, public safety, be impacted? Notwithstanding additional dollars coming in, unless with those dollars you're actually going to be, hire more people or it's overtime. But we'll get to that. I think today, same questions sort of apply to labs and research with your current personnel and whether the dollars coming in, just the overtime. But if you have a court appearance in a Westchester court and a Nassau court, and it's the same person, you know, has it. So maybe, Doctor, you want to address that to the community?
Can I just ask one question? Where is this act coming from? Is it coming from your department, the board? Is it coming from upstairs?
Well, the county executive forwarded the IMA to us, for at least for the labs and research, and I guess the public safety will be coming. So, Gordon, today what's in front of us, the one IMA from the county executive on behalf of the Department of Labs.
I join you in your question because there's a witness fee, obviously. Coming from Westchester County, that witness fee is going to be a lot different than the travel fees that we would have to go if we have to go to Nassau County.
There is a list, if you look in the IMA, list of fees. So again, we're focusing now on the labs and research.
But the reason that your public safety IMA may not have reached you yet is we originally drafted for a latent fingerprint analysis. They later called us back and asked us to include ballistics in it, which slowed down the process. So it's still in draft form. I'm sure it'll be forthcoming.
But it's still obviously dealing with their lab, their crime lab, right? I mean, it's information that your department, the public safety department, can help generate in the analysis. But it's work done by the lab. So I mean, we'll have to.
It's work done by
both. Okay. So
the public safety handles latent fingerprint analysis and ballistics comparisons.
I see.
Lab handles fiber trace, etc. That's in the IMA before you.
As we address this particular issue about the financial impact, I guess there is a fiscal impact statement that says that the cost is $4,500. This is the labs and research part. The cost is $4,500 and the revenues are $9,000. So maybe based upon three cases per year, so maybe we can find out what the basis for that assumption is, that there are three cases per year and they'll cost that amount.
Well, also, again, we'll ask the doctor to go into, but again, there's the financial impact or benefit, assuming we're charging for our services, and presumably we would make some money. But along with that, the impact on personnel and activities and efficient service to our communities by the department. So, but again, for today, the Public Safety Committee and Budget Committee are going to focus on the one IMA dealing with labs and research, although the issues are basically the same. So again, for the record, Doctor, identify yourself.
I'm Dr. Ashar with the lab and research. Yes, we have enough personnel to handle the work that we expect from them. I don't expect every case that they have, they would send it. Like they say, something that they need in the emergency.
Mr. Burroughs.
I just have a question to the doctor and anybody on this committee can refresh my memory. I know that we heard from many people that worked over at labs and research during the budget process. And originally there was a message sent from the county attorney, from the county executive, who wanted to eliminate certain positions in lab and research. And we were told they were overwhelmed as it was, that letting go of people would hurt this county's ability to prosecute cases. So it seems to me that you, doctor, are saying something different than the employees who testified against before us during the budget process. And I want to know what your impression is, what is going on here, because clearly, if we're now going to send people from this county, transporting them, the fees and so forth, doing the analysis days at a time possibly to testify in a criminal matter, I'm now curious as to whether the county can afford that. I could see that your department is going to come back before this board one day in the future and say, we need more personnel to analyze these. Now the personnel beyond salaries is going to cost us pensions and so forth. So that's the question I have before you and before the committee.
Yeah, before the committee, when I came last time, we had a request to eliminate six positions that were on the ground. That was a DNA one. That was reinstated, so we do have those six people now on our staff. So we can handle it. The issue was, when I lose six people, will I be able to do the testing? Yes, I'll be able to do all the testing. It won't be timely manner. So just to get it in timely manner, we reinstated those positions.
Okay, now before just Mr. Nolan pointed out the fiscal impact by three cases a year, but there's a whole fee schedule of evidence analysis, reporting, report writing, court testimony. I mean, we're only talking about three, specific cases.
My question is, what's the basis for that assumption if there are only going to be three cases?
Well, that's what I was saying to Josh, to your point. There's a whole fee schedule of a whole variety of charges for a whole variety of items. And then the fiscal report says three cases a year. So I don't know what the definition of a case is, but can you explain what just define the case in anticipation. Maybe, you know, it's all laid out, but maybe he's saying it's really not very much. There'll be one case in March and one case in July and one case in November. I mean, is this sort of like a week, you know, so we don't expect a weekly or monthly interactions, only three times a year? Is that the definition of a case?
These are homicide cases that are handled, so depending on the number of homicides that the county...
Oh, I see. So the work with labs is only for homicides. Is that
only for homicides.
Okay, they didn't say that.
Oh. Okay, well then
So that was an estimate of three based upon.
Is it based upon Nassau has three homicide cases a year, or has three that require trace evidence analysis, or what? I mean, how do you come up with three? That's the question.
Our conversations with Nassau County's director of the crime lab, and our director of forensics.
Commissioners to homicides that haven't occurred yet. I think it's the homicides that are being prosecuted at this point. So it is a very real number. They know what they can anticipate going to trial.
For the year.
That's right.
The IMA is for 1 year. All right, so that puts a perspective on it, that from a personnel point of view, is we have some idea then how many cases are in the system. And okay, Mr. Harper.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm asking this question to all of you kind of from an entrepreneurial standpoint. You know, Legislator Burroughs raised the issue in the budget season. Positions were out. Positions were back in. And Nassau County is really now in a pickle. They're looking at least at what I've read, you know, hundreds if not thousands of cases being in question now because of their lab. And you know, we have a state-of-the-art lab. We've got incredible people who do incredible work. Could this be... Yeah, and we're talking with the commissioner of the budget director, rather, about fees for other parts of labs and research. This clearly is an area of expertise for us. They're coming to us now on a small level, both from a business standpoint and a crime standpoint. Is this something that could be a profit center for us in the future? I mean, could we market this service? We're all talking about shared services in the state. Is this something that... You know, we look at this as a pilot project, and then maybe, you know, we try to expand in another year.
I think I would rather wait and see
how it works out.
Because once we make a business, they may say, hey, I'm sending you 10, now I'm going to send you 100. And we may not be able to handle it. So I would rather just wait and see.
Okay, but you'd be open to that possibility after reviewing how we do with this. Okay, thank you.
Legislator Myers?
Just to the same point, that's the exact same thing I had written down. It would be some interesting research to be done while this is going on to look and see in the United States whether counties share labs and research. I mean, this could be a significant opportunity for consolidation, sharing services between the two counties, doing it far more cheaply than having two distinct labs and research facilities. So possibly, I guess my request would be through the chair, while we're waiting for all of this to occur and after we've got this IMA going, perhaps the departments could begin to do some analysis of and research into whether this is a possible something that could be performed right here and whether it's done within other counties within the United States.
Legislator Marcotte.
Thank you. I just have a question with regard to the fee schedule. Because the fee schedule that is attached it's all very clerical and reports and that type of thing. So what fee schedule will they be subject to for, you know, actual testing? You know, because we had a fee schedule that was produced March 28th, and then last Friday there was another fee schedule for labs and research. So which one will they be bound? Do you follow?
You're talking about a different fee schedule.
But the actual testing, which is not here, these are for, you know...
We've got case handling fee from the joint case.
So it's just an hour. It's not broken down by individual tests for NASA.
I mean,
the case evidence means actually they have a clothing on an article, and
right.
They look for it. So it's timely manner we decide to charge.
So it won't be, even if it's four tests or 10 tests, it doesn't matter. They're going to get it throughout. Understood. Thank you.
Now, maybe a little bit to Legislator Myers' point, I don't see in the IMA specific reference to murder cases. And that may be on purpose, but, you know, to keep it vague. But it opens up, I guess, the possibility, if the opportunities exist, the point Legislator Harkin was making, since I don't see in the documents limited to homicides, I don't know if, you know, some other type of crime generates evidence, trace evidence that needs analysis. You're saying there's just an oral understanding that'll be limited to these, to potentially three homicide cases? Or it's not, is there a reason why it's not laid out any more specificity? Or are you looking for additional work that should come along?
I think the terminology trace is understood. It's probably more of a forensic term.
To us lay people, so trace is involved in, but how can it be involved only in homicides? Is that, was that what that means?
It's a forensic, but it can be involved also in other crimes. Burglary or tool analysis.
So the document on the four corners, as I see it, is not limited to homicides. It sounds like the understanding is, but to your point, if there's more business, I mean, not that we're hoping for a lot of homicides, but we know there's certainly burglaries and other types of, there's a lot of crime out there, unfortunately. But again, are we going to turn down other work pursuant to this IMA? We're saying, no, the intent was three homicides a year, and that's all we're doing. It seems like a thing we should do. We should cooperate with NASA. We should go ahead and do it. I'm just trying to make sure for the record we understand what we're doing, if the intent or the goal is, no, it's three homicides, here's the fiscal impact, that's the way, and then next year we come here to do it for another year, and there were 3,000 burglaries that we were working on. I mean, is there an intent one way or the other, or should we add a homicide to the IMA, or keep it more general?
I think at this point you want to keep it pretty general, but my understanding is Suffolk County is taking a lot of the other work from them. Okay, so it's not just to come to Westchester.
It makes it clear on the record, because this expires a year from now, and really, depending on what happens in Nassau, it's very likely we'll be back here next year doing it again. And so, for the record, as we understand it, Suffolk is, I mean, to Judy's point, Suffolk is helping out a fair amount. Nassau is looking to Westchester, at least for homicides, as we understand it now, and potentially other work.
We'll leave it there, I guess. NASA? I mean, are they charging, to your point?
Well, I'm sure Suffolk. Well,
to what we're charging, and if we look at this as a business?
Suffolk?
Yeah.
We should find that out. We really should.
Pete, and then the chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I realize, actually, this is a small IMA, I agree with you. We should do it. We should move forward. We have great confidence in our lab. But to Legislator Meyer's point and to what I said earlier, perhaps when things are a little slower, we can have a fuller conversation about this, because I really see this as an opportunity, perhaps, for revenue. And to Legislator Burrow's point, we want to be careful when we budget to incorporate all the legacy costs. But I think at another juncture, we should have an extended conversation about this, because I think there could be an opportunity here.
Okay. Mrs. Marcotte, did I get to you? Did I?
You did. Thank you.
I did. Well, so,
yes.
Okay.
This question with regard to the fee schedule.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Chairman Jenkins.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just tying in on the points that everyone was making, that this is, we should move forward on this particular item. But we do have a fee schedule that analysis that Budget Director was supposed to be presented back to us based on Dr. Asher's and the department's initial analysis on all the fee schedules for that. And certainly it would be very helpful if we knew what Suffolk County was charging for this particular service. I'm sure they're not doing it for free either. So I think that we would want to make sure that our numbers are consistent with that. And although we should move forward on this particular item, we should certainly make sure that it's consistent with what's charging. And
to that point, if I may,
yes,
perhaps before even moving ahead on this, if a simple phone call. Are they choosing us because we're cheaper than Suffolk?
I don't think so. I think the work needs to be distributed differently, because I don't think other
counties
would be able to take
up. Yeah, let's keep riding. Yeah, Suffolk is not. But Suffolk is doing other work.
That's right.
Suffolk is doing other work.
Completely different.
This is the trace of.
Right.
Let me just say, I think we certainly, I certainly support having staff on my committee, the budget staff, consider pursue this. But at the end of the day, I'm not, Suffolk legislation is sitting there. Oh, let's say Westchester legislation is charged, and then we're back and forth. If we're charging the right amount, the fiscal impact says we're making money, I have faith in our folks clearly this administration wants to make as much money as it can.
Right.
That point's made clear to us.
Absolutely.
So, you know, if we find out afterwards that somehow they missed the boat, our staff could do that. But I don't necessarily, Judy, with all due respect, wait to see what. So I don't really care what Suffolk is charging. If we're because they may be charging under the market. I mean, I wouldn't to take their guidance. Maybe they missed the boat. We don't know about them, their staff. So whatever Suffolk is charging, they may be undercharging. So
this would be
numbers.
An opportunity. Yeah.
Well, you find out.
Well,
that's it.
Our staff,
I don't understand why they
because it doesn't.
That
frankly,
out.
My opinion, I don't really care what Suffolk is. First of all, it's for different work. Let's keep it straight. It's for different work. Matter.
Why do you say that?
Yes, it
he's saying it's apples and oranges.
Well, they're charging.
Let's make a point. This does not require them to come to us. They could have IMAs with five counties and decide who they want to send it to.
So our people have negotiated a fee. I'm prepared to start for now. Let our staff pursue it. But for now, I would go ahead. The point is, Suffolk could be charging more or less. It's for different work. And if they're charging too little, then we should lower our price because Suffolk is charging
more.
No, I'm saying the opposite.
At the end of the day, this is a $9,000 IMM.
Exactly.
In the spirit of time management, that's
like the
simple. I would like to move
this analysis
at this juncture. And then we can have this other conversation.
From both committees, Mr. Harkin?
For both committees.
Sorry, I suppose it's. Okay, Mr. Harkin. For both committees, he's on both committees, and here Mr. Burton is also on both committees, so accept the second.
Bernie's second for
budget.
Oh, for budget. Okay. Bill is okay. Mr. Laser Burton for public safety. So let's try to get beyond this IMA. So but if any other questions, let's entertain any other questions. We will have staff pursue the fee schedule because you know it's out there, we can certainly check it, but there's not really anticipating three cases. And John says even if they call it off, they may not call it off. So let's try to move forward on this.
Yeah, and I think the concerns of the different committees have been said.
Right.
So the staff and everybody should know what our thinking is.
So right. No more questions. I call for a vote for both committees. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, it's passed unanimously by both committees. Thank you. So that's okay. The IMA. Thank you, Doctor, for that. And I think the next item for the joint public safety and budget, I think, is an item that the labs and research doctor. I don't think you need to say this.
Before the labs folks are packing up to go and just looking at that subject, so did you get the document that you work from? Do you, Mr. Chairman?
I don't.
We wait for
on the lab on the fees for this IMA.
No.
Okay. I don't know, Mr. Chair. I don't know. That's for the budget committee.
Have we received the fee structure? Okay. But at the same time, we are not going to discuss it now, Mr. Chairman, in the interest of time. But Dr. Asher, we would ask you to come back with your finance staff to discuss what we're going to be moving forward regarding fee structure.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. The other item on our joint agenda was a request from the Chairman Jenkins. I know a couple of weeks ago, Commissioner Longworth in one of our other meetings made reference to, I think it was 9 mobile command units, vans, and I guess that triggered something in the Chairman's mind. So we've asked Commissioner Longworth to come back and just, I guess, more from as much a budget perspective to maybe discuss a little more detail the 9 mobile vans. And I guess in addition to that, the other item that was requested to be discussed is, more specific security details for the county executive. Is that a fair characterization, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, and the source of funding and the utilization of the units as to how they've been dispatched. And Commissioner, if there is anything that affects security in general, because it may be information not privy to the public, you let us know.
So Commissioner Longworth, then you introduce your colleagues.
I have with me Chief Hodges, the Chief of Operations of the Department of Public Safety, as well as Lieutenant Luciano from the Special Operations Division. As you can imagine, both issues are somewhat sensitive because whenever you discuss security publicly, you compromise the security to some degree. So I have statements with regard to both, and I'd like to read them. I think you'll answer a lot of the questions, and I'll be happy to address whatever questions I can. In regard to the board's inquiry about vehicles, I thought it would be useful if we begin with a quick overview of the Department of Public Safety's fleet. We have obtained some new vehicles lately, but it appears there is some confusion about what they are and how we intend to use them, and whether they are replacements or additions to the fleet. The Department of Public Safety currently has significantly fewer vehicles than it did when I became commissioner last year. As of today, the department has 166 vehicles, cars mostly, compared to 216 in January of 2010, a net reduction of 50 vehicles. We've streamlined our fleet to maximize efficiency and lower costs. We're making smart choices about replacement vehicles, and we're getting as many, and we are getting, and many of them are being paid for by state and federal grants. Recently, I was forwarded an inquiry from the board asking about 9 new command vehicles believed to have been obtained for the department. We do not have 9 command vehicles. We will never have 9 command vehicles. We did recently take possession of 2 new SUV-style command vehicles. One is assigned to my office, and one is assigned to the office of the first deputy commissioner. These vehicles are quite versatile and contain a range of sophisticated communications and other specialized equipment. They're able to be utilized as mobile command posts in the event of unusual incidents or large-scale disasters. We recently used one of these vehicles at the scene of a chemical suicide, a complex and dangerous situation that required coordinated response by the county police, hazardous device unit or bomb squad, our crime scene unit, the Department of Emergency Services, and the Irvington Police and Fire Department. In fact, our 2 command vehicles were purchased for us by the Department of Emergency Service in further of us accomplishing a joint mission. They are comparable with command vehicles in the DES fleet. They enable us to enhance the interoperability between the departments that is critical when managing unusual events and larger emergencies or multiple incidents occurring at the same time. In addition, in the past year, we have created a multi-incident management team in Westchester. About 30 members of DPS, DES, local fire, and police agencies have received advanced training to enable us to respond as a team to a large-scale emergency in any community in Westchester. FEMA recommends that a county of our size have a capable and ready incident management team of this type to manage natural disasters and large-scale emergencies. The 2 command vehicles I have described are a critical component of the incident management team's infrastructure. Along with the 2 command vehicles, the county police currently have 2 additional SUV-style vehicles in our fleet. Neither is a command vehicle. The first is a 2007 Chevy Tahoe. It is marked patrol vehicle and is assigned to the Patrol Services Division. The second is an unmarked 2011 Tahoe that was purchased by the Department of Transportation for a surface transportation unit. That plainclothes unit safeguards our B-line bus system and transit hubs. Let me tell you a little about 4 new vehicles we will be obtaining in the near future. They are SUV like the others and will contain mission-specific equipment for our other special operations division. All of these are being purchased with Homeland Security grant funding. None are being paid for from the county's tax levy. And there's more good news. These grants come with a sustainability provision, meaning the ongoing maintenance costs associated with these vehicles are also grant funded. The first of these vehicles is a radiation detection vehicle that is being funded under the Secure the Cities program. As you know, we already utilize a range of radiation equipment among our patrol officers and onboard our marine units, as well as the aviation, the helicopters. The vehicles will specifically enhance the radiation detection and counterterrorism capabilities. In an open forum like this, I can't be more specific than that. 2 of the new SUVs will be assigned to the Hazardous Device Unit, commonly known as the Bomb Squad. Allow me a moment to update you on the Hazardous Device Unit because it relates to discussion of vehicles. In a post-9/11 world, we face a new range of threats to our safety. It is imperative that we be capable of responding to incidents involving chemical, biological, radiological, nuclear, or explosive devices. That is why the Bomb Squad, through hard work and substantial training, has become one of the few Type 1 bomb squads in New York State. That is why we changed its name to the Hazardous Device Unit, because the mission's gone beyond what we traditionally think of as explosives. As a Type 1 unit, the federal government requires the Hazardous Device Unit to be capable of handling more than one incident at a time. That is why we have sufficient personnel with proper training and expertise to do so. And why the federal government, through Homeland Security Grant, is willing to pay for these vehicles to help us meet that mandate. The 4th vehicle
again, we will obtain under the grant is a sophisticated crime scene processing unit. The equipment it will carry will enable a hazardous device unit to collect evidence at crime scenes that involve so-called seaburn materials, chemical, biological, radiological, etc. It will also be a valuable tool to assist our forensic investigation unit to process more traditional crime scenes. It replaces a vehicle that dates back to the dawn of modern-day forensics. In all four cases, the vehicles we have just discussed are replacement for equipment that has been or will be removed from our fleet. The original vehicles were bought with, maintained with county tax dollars. Now we're getting new vehicles and sophisticated equipment paid for by grants and maintained by grant funds. Forgive the cliche, but it's a win-win situation for our taxpayers. The biggest win of all, though, is that these new vehicles and the state-of-the-art equipment they include significantly enhance our ability to protect the people of Westchester. The safety and security of our residents is our primary priority, and I know it is yours as well. The vehicles we are discussing today are critical to our ability to accomplish that goal. Thank you for your attention. I'll be happy to take your questions.
I think it begs the question, the nine county command units number, and I would defer to you, Mr. Jenkins, because I really would like to know where that number comes from.
Well, I'd say the commission did, the commissioner mentioned
yeah, if you had the number.
But first let me say we have larger command vans, or one or two large ones that we have countywide. So right. Even the, I'm just curious, the two, you mentioned two of the, quote, the nine, this number, are one for your office and one for the deputy commissioner. But they are used in conjunction with those larger command
vehicles. The initial response vehicle.
The initial response.
The larger command vehicle is used for protracted deployment. We're going to be somewhere for 16 hours, 2 days, 3 days.
Okay, so depending on the incident, you would then call in that.
That's correct.
You would obviously put money and resources into that large unit. So that's for a more prolonged incident.
Okay. The reason one's assigned to my office and one's assigned to DC's office is enables us to go in two different directions with multiple events, which has occurred several times recently.
And maybe then just clarify the number, because I think several weeks ago you did use this number nine, if I recall, and maybe in the context, you don't recall it?
No, I don't
recall
it. Okay. It may have been in a different context.
Okay. But in terms of those, they're not nine new vehicles. You've discussed new vehicles coming shortly and two that we already have in.
That's correct.
Well, Chairman Jenkins, we'll let you follow up on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate it. Commissioner, certainly keeping with some of the sensitivities. So the two command centers, one's assigned to your office and one's assigned to the DC's office, the deputy commissioner's office, or is that the ones that they roll with? That's the one they utilize on the day-to-day?
It's a combination of both. We utilize the day-to-day unless they're needed for some other mission. If they're transporting more people with a fit professional car, then it may be deployed somewhere else. We're multitasking almost all of our vehicles.
Understood. So the question again, the first question started with, although they were utilized grant funding for purchasing of the vehicles, wouldn't we still have a conversation around this table in order to purchase those vehicles? In other words, using the grant funding for that specific purpose so that there would be realization from the legislative body of what we're doing with these funds, because we still, at the end of the day, are ultimately responsible for them, even if the funds didn't come from taxpayers.
My understanding is that many grants are processed and funding is spent through them without actually making it to the board. And that's a practice that long predates my presence.
Mr. Chairman, unless I'm mistaken, we would certainly have an understanding of what the grant that we were receiving, because we would have taken possession of the grant and it would have needed the board's authority to even get into that without diving down.
Well, maybe the questions would have been in the trust agreement, the 2011 budget. That we pass as a whole section on trust and grants. Would that be identified as something that was coming? So it may, I don't know, we can check with your staff.
We just don't take a bucket of money and say, we're going to use this for some type of emergency services without having some identification of what it is. And traditionally, the department, even in the past, has come before us and said, this is what we would like to utilize these dollars for, because at the end, the county is responsible at the end. So it didn't matter where the funds came from, that Westchester County still would be responsible for the dollars. We have a whole lawsuit on things like that, so we're real sensitive about that kind of issue.
I think to Mr. Gowski's point, though, the IJs for these grants are submitted years in advance. Some of the money we're spending now is from grants from 2008, and I would bet that they are included in the proposal when the budget's adopted.
Okay.
Can we be given the data as to what grants were charged for what vehicles?
And that would be helpful as well. Because this way we don't know anything other than, you know, we have these.
Federal government moves slowly sometimes, and maybe several years.
But to your point, I mean, we know that the emergency services budget is mainly grants, but this board is usually informed, and you're right, Commissioner, to the budget. So, to Mr. Jenkins' point, we need to make sure that the purpose for which this grant was admitted is being executed as submitted. And I think that's the concern.
And again, so if we break them down further, and certainly not today at this meeting, because again, for time purposes, if we could get that information in writing, would be helpful again, because you're clear to suggest that the vehicles were not replacement vehicles, because you measured your fleet 750 cars, basically, right? Over the years, as many departments have done, since we hadn't authorized any new purchases of vehicles in the last 3 years, if I recall correctly. So from that particular point of view, right, the concern from the board is just to make sure that those things would be handled in a consistent manner, which would be that it would come here. Specifically noting that, you know, we have a new clean clothes unit, which is the one the county executive goes around in, which is the DPW purchase, which I'm not sure how that particular one came through. Our homeland security dollars for that, we'll get to that when we get the data, when we identify the sources of funding for those particular things, because that's clear. The other units, there's no question about their utilization, Mr. Chairman, and whether four ones for homeland security and radiation detection have that. You know, but this board has been 110% supportive of Department of Public Safety and Emergency Services on those type of activities. It's just a question of how the dollars flow around. And I know I see Commissioner Hsu back there, so we certainly are always paying attention to the identification when dollars or vehicles are utilized from grant funding as opposed to other particular sources of funding, specifically as we would be on the hook for those at the end of the day.
Mr. Chairman, I think maybe I can suggest to the Chairman of the Budget Committee that when we get into the budget cycle and we're talking to public safety, that we specifically identify, because these grants are 1 or 2 or even 3 years late, or just, you know, behind schedule, and so we're trying to figure out what the needs are for 2012, then what's in the pipeline for 2009 and 2010, and we just need to make sure the staff are on that and identify with the numbers, and so I think we can solve that problem so we kind of know what's coming. If I could just ask, 50 vehicles are gone, who doesn't have a vehicle? I had one last year.
Well, I think we're sharing more vehicles. Okay. We're not, you know, people are on different ships. They don't need separate vehicles. And that's kind of just qualify 2 points Chairman Jenkins made. First being, when you're down 50 vehicles, everything's a replacement vehicle. But it would be disingenuous of me to say that we disposed of every vehicle that we replaced in this instance. They get handed down. County police is like a big family. Like clothes getting handed down. Cars work their way down the pecking order to make sure that we get the full dollar value out of the vehicle. And I'm sorry, to your question?
Well, but not to those 50. Those 50 are now out of the fleet completely. Those 50 are out, but as other vehicles come in, you say they may move around within the department.
That's correct.
But this, you're at a net deficit reduction of 50, so those 50 are gone. Just more sharing of
That's
vehicles
correct.
And... haven't compromised public safety in any way, not having those vehicles?
No.
And again, to that point, Mr. Chairman, I mean, we had during the budget presentation, I can't remember the number offhand, it was a net reduction of the entire fleet, because A, we didn't put any money in for the last two or three years. Now, we said that the cars need to be utilized longer, and we did not fund any additional activity on that. Since these vehicles, for you, Mr. Chairman, do these vehicles belong to Westchester County?
Right. Yes, they do.
So do that, just for that point, Mr. Chairman, the Board of Legislators would have had to authorize the purchase of additional property that would belong to Westchester County. So again, at the end of the day, when we get the additional data, we would actually see
Well, we have to go, you're right, Mr. Chairman, but we may have authorized them in a budget 2 years ago.
So we more do authorize the purchase of 15 patrol vehicles.
Right. So we just have to look for those grants because, you know, they're in there and they're years behind. Over the years, this board has pushed prior administration and some said this administration to move our fleets over to hybrid vehicles, a whole separate issue of protecting the environment. We've advised over the years that in the area of public safety, sometimes these hybrid vehicles don't necessarily meet the needs of some of the areas of emergency services and public safety. Can you just address that issue, these new SUVs, the things you're doing? Are there opportunities to have more environmentally acceptable vehicles in public safety, or where do you stand on that policy?
In some instances there are, but in other instances there aren't. Many of you, well, first of all, the cost of a lot of the hybrids make them less attractive in the bigger vehicles, which we need to transport the heavier equipment. But we do run a variety of hybrids throughout the department in various units.
Okay, so again, maybe not to take the time, as we get into the budget cycle season, then maybe we'll get more details on the breakdown, because it was that was sort of the last area of county government where we were not, you know, moving in the hybrid area. But as technology changes, times change, it sounds like you do have some in your fleet.
And we actually have a piece of legislation, Mr. Chairman, that it's in legislation committee about setting policy for Westchester County for the flex fuel type vehicles, because, you know, at least the 2011 plainclothes unit is a hybrid vehicle, and if the governor could drive around with a big excursion flex fuel one, we're pretty sure that most of the people in the state can.
From my years in the environment committee, when we tried to push that, we were told back then that public safety was sort of off limits to those types of vehicles. So I'm glad to hear that we're.
I could also just add to remind me another point. The surface transportation unit, while it's been pulled various things over the years, it's been around for 20 plus years, and it's funded by the cops are actually paid for by DOT. It's not a new unit.
Okay, so I think on that issue with the vehicles, we're.
Yeah, and Mr. Agassi, yeah. You know, it relates to public safety and you and your energy saving plan, so I would defer the public safety part to you. Right. You keep on deferring to me, so I'll defer to you.
budget likes to pay for hybrid vehicles.
All right. In the last paragraph of the letter of the chairman, we requested some detail regarding the ranks and hours by week on the county executive detail. Yeah.
Again, if you bear with me, I'll refer to the state, which I crafted to kind of work around the security concerns related to it. Let me begin to say that I am always concerned with the public discussion of how we provide security, whether it's for a person, an event, or a facility. The reality is, the more you say about it, the more the security is compromised. It's simply not consistent with the best practices. On the other hand, I understand and respect Ward's oversight responsibilities. So I hope, as we proceed, we can find the right balance between concerns and your needs. As you know, security and transportation for the county executive was once provided on a full-time basis with a dedicated security detail. In the last administration, three members of the Department of Public Safety were assigned exclusively to the county executive. They drove him to work, remained with him on the ninth floor, and accompanied him whenever he left the building, and drove home at the end of the day. This use of the security detail has been around since the 70s. The cost of that security was easy to determine because the assigned officers or detectives spent all of their time with the county executive. From 2006 to 2009, the cost of salaries and overtime for the officers in the security detail averaged approximately $325,000 per year. Our current county executive, when he was a candidate for election, made a pledge that he would eliminate full-time security detail. He said he would be selective about his use of the county police, and he promised to drive himself to work and home. This is just what has occurred. The security detail was eliminated after Mr. Eno said he would not use it. He drove himself to and from work. He often rides to meetings and events with members of his staff, rather than ask for the assistance of the county police. When we do utilize police officers to transport Mr. Torino, that decision is based on a need for mobility, time constraints, parking difficulties, and security concerns. There is no one assigned exclusively to drive the county executive. We use an on-duty police officer or detective who is available on a particular shift. We have, however, primarily been able to utilize three members of the department. This is because they work varying work days and shifts and are available on straight time on nights and weekends. Our mandate for Mr. Esposito is to limit any overtime. Those three department members, effective Brett Cochran, is assigned to the Executive Operations Unit. Detective Israel Lopez handles general investigation cases. Police Officer Jonathan Gould is assigned to the Patrol Services Division. All of these men have other duties in the police department. If one of them is not available, we have on occasion used someone else to transport the county executive. I drove him myself. When Mr. Ransomino and I are attending the same outside meeting or event, I believe that the board has requested a detailed breakdown of hours involved. This is difficult because we generally utilize a person for this task for just a few hours from a given shift. Unlike the formal security detail, where it is possible to know that an officer spends an entire shift with the county executive, that is really rarely the case now. There have been occasional trips to Albany or multiple meetings in New York City where an officer has spent a full day with the county executive, but those are rare. On average, I would estimate that Detective Brent Hoffman has spent about 12 hours a week providing transport and security to the county executive. Detective Lopez is about 8 hours a week, and Officer Gould has been much less frequently used and often goes weeks at a time without being asked to assist. I can tell you, because of the way we track overtime, we've spent $12,000 in overtime related to the county executive since January 2010. That is about 2 hours per week over those 16 months. By way of comparison, between 2006 and 2009, overtime for the security detail ranged from $30,000 in 2009 to as high as $70,000 in 2007. In accordance with Mr. Astorino's wishes, the county police spend significantly less time providing security and transportation to the county executive than was the norm. I can tell you quite candidly that I do have concerns that the level of security is not sufficient. Earlier this year, I recommended that we reestablish a formal security detail for the county executive. Mr. Astorino told me no. I made my recommendations in the aftermath of the shooting of Congresswoman Giffords in Arizona, and I do also, and also to arise against threats against public officials nationally and security concerns closer to home. I do not want to be extremely specific about those local concerns, but they include letters, emails, phone calls, and personal threats. In addition, the difficult and often unpopular decisions that have been made by the county executive in uncertain economic times are also a concern to me from a security point of view. But at this time, Mr. Astorino's direction, we continue to provide more limited level of support to the county executive that has been the traditional practice in Westchester. Additionally, the county executive is confronted by various people unannounced at his residence and while traveling throughout the county. There have been, I think I'll hold the rest of this because there's specific responses to, the rumor mill and things that are floating around about related to the security details, so I'll take the questions one at a time.
I think it's told you have an annual number, I guess, maybe, again, in terms of, provide for the budget committee, on 2010, I guess, was there a number that was spent on these details? Did you have that? You gave us the overtime information. But
I gave you the overtime information.
So it's hard, you say it's hard to...
We average it out at about 20 hours per week, so I can calculate a number for you. It's not a problem.
The point of the matter was, one, I think there's no one around this table that does not believe that the county executive should have the level of security that's necessary to protect him and his family. It was not something that was done under the last administration. It was done, I believe it started like, in the 70s to do that. And that's not the question. The question for the budget committee is saying, what's the number? Not specifically the activities, et cetera, right? And quite frankly, it's better from a budgeting perspective when you had the line that said it was the security detail, not just because it's just being buried in the numbers. It's just the best way of putting it. Right? If there's still three individuals that are providing the level of protection that is necessary, it's the same three individuals that were budgeted in the budget. How the county executive decides to use those three individuals certainly should be a matter between him and the Commissioner of Public Safety and Security. Right?
With all due respect, that those three people, testimonies, had to do other things between the three of them.
That, the truth, again, from a budgeting perspective, this committee and its oversight needs to understand, and thanks, Commissioner, for pointing that out right from the beginning.
20 hours.
Just needs to understand, well, he said it averaged 20 hours. I mean, you know, it's a budget. It's simply, you know, punching the clock, et cetera. Right? That is the way that that should be done. It's not more or less. Right? And again, not to try to, because none of us, again, are thinking about anything other than the safety and security of the county executive, because that's important. And specifically with all of the people, forget about the decisions that we make here in this building, around a table, et cetera. There's just some people out there that are just needing to have that additional security force in front of them to make sure that they're taking care of making sure that they're respected for decisions that people have to make. All I'm pointing out, again, and that's what the request was for, was that gets identified in the budget. Just as a line in the budget, it doesn't need to have the level of detail because it's not really helpful for security purposes to say what they're doing. And should the county executive use the person for 2 hours, 3 hours, et cetera, that's up to him and being able to put that back and forth. But at least there'll be a line that's clear in the budget that shows that those particular offices are being paid for from the taxpayers, and that's fine, and that we need to move forward from that. That's all it was about. It wasn't really about getting down to the specific details on understanding the offices themselves. I think that's in itself, you know, my father being a former, you know, a retired police officer, I don't understand that level of security that people don't want to have their names put out like that either. So I'm just suggesting again that we could do you, Mr. Chairman, from budget, have that line identified and be able to deal with that going forward. And how it's deployed, I'm sure at the end of the day, when we get to budget, we have surplus, you know, that we have money not expended on a certain line, it will be no different than that. But again, it's not, it is inconsistent with what we have to do from a budget level to have the numbers buried, in essence, in the numbers. Thank you.
Just one item. Yep. The one reason it's a little more difficult to quantify than any other personnel matter is we may go a week without driving them at all, and we may have a week where we're within 30 hours a week. Mm-hmm. So it's not like I can give you, and I'm sure that if we were looking to schedule 3 months from now, it's not even set up yet. So it's a fluid activity. Sometimes I'll get a call 10 minutes before he needs to go somewhere, and I see who's available and send him there. So it's a difficult thing to quantify from that perspective. That's all I want there.
And again, do you, Mr. Chairman, that's so true, that from a budgeting perspective, it's a line in the budget, and how it gets hit, whether it's overtime, it's no different than the straight overtime. You have budget number for overtime. Hopefully you don't spend it, right? You know, that's...
You know. Well, okay, Mr. We can debate that when we get to the budget cycle. You know, some of us may or may not agree with your approach on that, but we can deal with that at the budget time when we're talking numbers. I think it was helpful, at least for the Public Safety Committee, to have a little bit of a breakdown of how it operates. Because in fact, the public and us don't see three people full-time. There it is. It's all part of the daily duty. And so I think this was helpful. To your point about the actual numbers and what, you know, what the public and we need to know is spent on security, we can get to that at the budget time and we can decide how exactly.
No, Mr. Chairman, what I'm saying and suggesting and what we're requesting is to add that number now, right? So that as we go throughout the year in our oversight committee on this budget committee, that we're tracking this no different than we track the people that are going through Playland's gate. There is no difference from that from a financial oversight perspective. We're not asking, again, for the specific details, what the calendar's like for the county executive. Trust me, I know the feeling. My calendar, all our calendars around the table are changing on a moment-by-moment basis. But for budgeting purposes and for the oversight of this committee, that's the request. It is not just for budget time. When we get to budget time, we see whether or not we put enough money into that particular activity, et cetera. But that's the request.
Well, we got a number, 20 hours a week, and staff can work out the cost of that.
Again, it's a budget question. We have a full year history. Let's work with a real number. That's the request at the table.
Mr. Chairman, the Public Safety Committee has no other questions, I don't think. Any other members of Public Safety have any questions to the Commissioner?
I think that was a helpful report. The only way you could deal with it budget-wise is to make an estimate, and just put that in the budget.
Based
on experience. That's the only way it could be done.
I will entertain a motion to adjourn Committee of Public Safety. Moved by Mr. Burton, seconded by Mr. Nona. All in favor?
Aye.
Public Safety stands adjourned.
Thank you, Mr. Rogowski. Thank you, Commissioner Company.
Thank you, Commissioner. Yeah.
Very, very helpful, though. Thank you for your time. Chairman Ryan, we have item 2 on the budget agenda, IMA countywide bus shelter. Commissioner Hsu. And budget members, we have minutes also. Please peruse them, and when you're ready, a motion would be in order.
There are a couple of questions I have, Mr. Chairman, so I'm interfered to move that on your schedule.
All right. You want to move them now? Minutes moved by Mr. Burton. Is there a second for budget? For the minutes?
I'll second.
Second by Ms. Williams. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are moved, and Mr. Burton does have a couple of changes that he will share with staff. Bus shelter program fact sheet just handed out. Commissioner, welcome, and for the record, if you could introduce both of you.
Sure. Greg Stiller, who runs our bus operations, which has been around about 4 decades.
And he's only 29.
Yeah,
that's right.
But not as long as the security.
Welcome. So this is a renewal,
right.
of
an renewal of the bus shelter program, the IMA. It's time to renew the IMA with the local communities. What I presented for you is a fact sheet of the new contract we're about to enter into with Clear Channel. Clear Channel held the previous contract for bus shelters too. This is a new contract that was awarded recently as a result of an RFP. The old contract had a provision, a renewal provision in the contract, and we notified Clear Channel at the time that we would go out in the street and test the market, but that we reserved the right to renew in the event that we got a revenue number that was lower than what they were offering on the renewal. And they were very clear with that, and they were okay with that. Consequently, they came back with an RFP that was matched the existing, gave us some kickers, which are basically the items on the bottom, 10 replacement shelters additional per year, 5 new shelters also in addition to the current, to the previous contract, which didn't have those kicker provisions. And there's an opportunity for the county to derive a slightly better revenue projection based on some minimum thresholds of advertising that they hope they can obtain through the agreement. So what I've listed for you is over the 5-year period to highlight in the RFP what we think we can derive from the shelter agreement. Clearly, it's an enhancement over the existing. It's the same vendor, Clear Channel. What I've also attached for you in the second page is a history of all the shelters in the various communities and the revenues that we've paid out since 2006.
And this is shared revenue with the municipality.
Correct. Based on the formula that's been in existence for at least 30 years. And the formula is as noted on the bottom. Typically what we do is, in the current agreement, whatever we derive as a revenue from Clear Channel, we subtract $75,000 for the county's administrative overhead. That ends up with a number for the current year at $500,000. From the $500,000, we take $250,000 of it as revenue for the department. We take the other 50% and we split it on a per shelter basis, which currently is $791.14. That number is then multiplied by the number of shelters that actually exist in the various municipalities. You'll notice, for instance, the bigger community, Yonkers, has a lot of shelters. They're getting $55,000. The next big shelter location is typically White Plains. They're getting approximately 33. The one after that is Greenberg. They get 26. So these are annual revenues that once the board approves the IMA, we do agreements with the various municipalities, similar to snow removal, and we send them a check once they return the document.
Yeah, if Harrison is not doing that bad, I don't see Marty complaining. I have Mr. Williams, Ms. Myers, and Mr. Jenkins for coming.
Yes, Mr. Commissioner, I'd like to know, with regard to how do you make a decision on siting new shelters within communities? How do you make that decision?
It's a mutual decision between the local municipality and the needs for the transit system. Our needs change as bus routes have ridership that increases and decreases, and also with changes of routing. Sometimes we abandon routes that are no longer needed, and there's shelters there, and we will take those shelters down.
So there is some discussion between the local municipality and the Department of Transportation?
Absolutely. We would not erect the shelter without the concurrence of the local municipality.
Okay, but does Clear Channel does any kind of a survey in terms of to see the, how do you assess the need when you put that one?
It's based on numbers of passengers. Who board at the stop. It is
at the stop.
At the stop. It's purely on a transportation need, it's not on anything else.
And it's basically passengers that you actually do. You know the number of passengers.
We know
that come on the bus.
Absolutely.
At each stop.
At each stop.
Okay, and then based on that base.
Yeah.
Okay.
There have been instances in the past where a shelter was justified. However, the community opposed it, as well as the adjoining property owners, and we've skipped it. We've passed it. Keep in mind that there are shelters in the county that are not county-owned shelters. These are shelters that were erected prior to our program, and the local community derives a certain degree of advertisement revenue, and they've been very reluctant to lose it.
Right.
We had a recent incident in Memphis where, you know, the chairman called me about a shelter that was destroyed, and actually was not our shelter. Now, we have asked Ms. Tali to replace the shelter with one of ours, but quite frankly, when we do that, we get the revenues and we split it with the municipality, whereas the individual organization loses that revenue. And there's probably, what, a couple dozen out there, Kevin?
Yep.
There are probably a couple dozen that are actually private, quote, shelter companies that are not county administered. And therefore, when they become destructive or they become unsightly and they call us for maintenance, we check it and then we notify the local legislator official and say it's not our shelter. And we've always made the offer to replace it with a county shelter.
All right, I have a whole list of members that want to have Ms. Myers next, Mr. Jenkins, Ms. McCudd, Mr. Burton, and I guess Mr. Rogowski.
Quick question. On the front of your fact sheet, you show 22 participating municipalities, but at my count, it shows 21. And second page, it shows 23 municipalities. And I wondered what the difference between, so the third question is, what are the difference between the two Mamaroneks?
The 22nd one, Judy, is us as the county. We have shelters up at the community college, at Grasslands, and at...
Got it. So Westchester County is also one. Okay.
We pay ourselves in addition to our cut.
Got it. Okay. Sounds good. Why are there 23 municipalities on the second page?
Westchester County.
Over here? Because we pay ourselves.
Yeah. No, but there's still. Westchester County makes 22 on the front page, but on the second page we have 23. And I wondered why Mamaroneck is listed twice.
Mamaroneck Town, Mamaroneck Village.
The town is the larger one?
The village is the larger one. There's only one shelter in Mamaroneck Town.
So the village is the larger one.
So that should be really one.
The town is the second one. So on the first page, then, Mamaroneck's not listed at all.
Well, that should be anything.
So it should be 23.
So that would make it 23.
I typed this late the other day. I'm sorry.
So that would make it 23.
Yep.
Participating municipalities. Got it. Thank you.
And I'm gonna interrupt a little bit, and I have a list of people, and this is the reason why this committee insists that you give us information ahead of time, because we can have a staff and legislators peruse it and submit corrections before it gets to the table, and we're not getting that. All right. Are you done, Ms. Meyer?
Yep, thank you.
Mr. Jenkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just going to note the cooperation that's always been extended from Commissioner Hsu and Transportation, which is the whole crew that they all have done just a fantastic job of doing that. Particular one, this particular shelter, was on Main Street, Mr. Chairman, and we saw this thing with the yellow tape all around it, and it was a complaint also from the Downtown Merchants Association on this particular thing. Mr. Hsu's folks came back almost within an hour of being having the report to let us know, A, that they would understand where whose shelter it was, and then send a note back and said that it was the City of Yonkers shelter, although we'd be happy to work on that arrangement. And we actually gave that to the Downtown Merchants Association to let them advance that cause, because we have so many shelters, at least in the downtown area, which is a big hub with thousands of riders that are going through. So again, I think this is an excellent thing that we should try to do, and it's a great example of the shared services, because the municipality really doesn't have to do anything but just receive a check. So that's it's really thing. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Mark.
Thank you very much. I just had a few questions with regard to the shelter program. I know a while ago there was some talk about implementing solar panels on some of them.
We have one shelter on a solar panel test. It's at the airport.
How's it working?
It's not working too well.
Are you looking at any different panels, or just sort of maybe abandoning that?
We have to move the sun. I have to move the sun closer to us. Or we have to move the earth a little closer to the sun.
You can do that?
Commissioner Hsu can do anything. He's the one guy who can do anything.
It will be a short form also. It's not doing well. We can't charge the batteries in the shelter itself to do it. So it has not been successful.
Question with New Rochelle on here. I know you have New Rochelle listed.
Yep.
When you have a chance, can you just email me how many of those are county and how many are not? Because my understanding was
there is another company. Their contract precedes ours back in the 70s. Yeah, and they haven't spoken to us about it. I have offered to replace their antiquated shelters with new county shelters that are well-maintained, and they don't want to do it.
Right. Well, they actually got a better deal revenue-wise, and that's why.
Okay.
I tried to talk them into it as well, and they didn't want to hear about it. And then, lastly, I know this has always been a concern. Alpha, can you mean you're only talking about how many shelters they have? Do they have
any
in that program?
They don't have any. We had the one up on Post Road, and for a couple of years, they wanted to take it down, so we did.
We might revisit that. Okay. Just for one of the concerns with some of the municipalities a while ago, and I don't know if it still holds true, was their from the municipality perspective, the inability to control the content that Clear Channel is. Has that changed at all?
No. The commissioner has the approval to accept or reject any shelter advertising.
So do you get those advertisements?
We get them in advance.
In advance?
Yes.
Do you send them out to the municipality, this is what's coming next month,
no,
6 months from
now?
Sure. Not at all.
We
use your best discretion.
There are certain guidelines that we follow for many years. Non-political, non-religious, no tobacco. No sex and God. No controversial things. I rejected several of them myself, and I passed them around to various co-workers, women, female, men, mm-hmm. and gotten their cross-section of opinion. And from time to time, I've asked the press office, County Executive Press Office,
what
I thought was kind of on the borderline.
Okay, perfect. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Burton?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Austin shoulder is Austin Village?
Town. On North State Road. And
okay, and the village shelter on Spring Street is a local shelter?
It's a local shelter, yes. And the one down at the railroad station.
Is also local?
Yes.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Turgot.
Yes, just more macro perspective, just to kind of maybe answer everyone's questions with my questions.
We're not signing any more work.
The role of Clear Channel, that's advertising only. That's their. Do they have a role in the shelters and anywhere? Are they just
Clear Channel maintains.
Okay, well, that's what I want.
They have a turnkey operation. When we have within their agreement, there is a response time when we report a deficiency in the shelter, and we call them and they respond. They'll replace the shelter. We basically give them the site.
That's what I was trying to get because we talked about how the county maintain it, but you maintain them, repair them through Clear Channel.
No.
No.
Yes.
Yes.
Right. So snow removal, we do.
Right. That's what I want to get. So snow removal is done by the county, but overall, any other maintenance of the shelter itself is a county responsibility, but in our deal with Clear Channel,
correct,
they do the maintenance,
correct,
and replacement,
correct,
and any kind of physical repairs.
Correct. They hold us harmless, they hold them responsible.
Okay, that's what I was just trying to get picked. So in addition to the content and the advertising content, which is the major, in exchange for that and the money, they also take on the turnkey responsibility,
correct,
to erect,
correct,
replace,
correct,
and maintain. So the, right, county's role then, in addition to cashing the checks, is limited to the snow plowing.
Is that snow plowing?
And do we in fact delegate and pay municipalities to do that? Is that a
no
county
this
function
year,
that your people go around?
Correct. Which is why we take some money off the top, because we actually have staff that's charged against the revenues we receive from the shelter.
Okay, so that's 75.
As you know, this winter there was a tremendous amount of outcry for people who couldn't get to the bus because the snow,
right,
was too high. And we have close to 3,000 stops.
But you find that 75 or 95,000 take off the top, you find that's as efficient and effective as opposed to doing what you do with the roads. We have all these IMA towns take care of our roads, but you just feel for a variety of reasons you want to maintain those bus shelters to make sure they get done, I assume.
Yeah.
You just want to know that.
Keep in mind that when the towns do snow removal for us, it's within their community. We don't necessarily dictate whether we're the first plow or the first drop,
right,
versus something else. And we've had that through the years in terms of, well, how come this road isn't plowed first? Well, with shelters, since we have 3,000, what we try to do is when we have a snow event, we try to go and hit the urban areas, White Plains, Yonkers, all the big areas where we have the most population riding the buses. Then we start going to the outlying areas. If we started to delegate to the communities,
our security detail. Do you have a dedicated crew, or your staff throughout the county? This is just one of their obligations when the snow hits.
We have folded the DPW crew, DOT crew, four into DPW into Valhalla campus to make up for some of the retirements. And what happens is when we'll clear the roads first, and then we'll put the entire department, the combined department, to do whatever we need to do.
Okay.
And respond to bus stops. As you know, this winter was brutal. We probably got couple dozen calls a day.
Okay, so you don't have a crew. You have basically the whole whoever's working that day, if that's what has to get done.
We reassign based on our priorities.
Okay, so again, so the county responsibility, which they actually do, is the snow plowing. Clear Channel does basically everything else. And the local municipality, they have a role in the site selection. They say that's a...
They have the right of first refusal. They don't really have a site selection. They can give us recommendations. We'll apply our criteria.
Okay, you apply criteria. So
if we find it meets it, and then we mutually agree that it's a proper location based on the adjoining property owner, then we'll install it.
But if the city or the municipality says, no, we just don't like it, you can override that decision?
We typically do not. We let home rule rule. We don't typically...
So you may not have a lot, but if you find this is a good location, but if the town really says we really don't want that, you will
accede to that. Cooperation.
I can't believe that has ever happened.
Yeah, I'm not saying I'm just
30 years.
Just trying to get the area's responsibility.
There are bus stop locations in residential areas where there is a major interface between two bus routes where there could potentially be a 30-minute gap between transfers.
Right, so if you need
and
that.
We find that it would be a good appropriate location, and we have had instances where even though the municipality owns the right-of-way for the shelter, the homeowner has objected, and we backed off.
Okay. And finally, SUNY, I know there were some issues. We took
them all down.
We took them down because they have theirs. And
yes. Just note that the payment that's going to the town of Harrison this year,
right,
will be less.
Because it was SUNY. Well, the town of Harrison picked up 2,500 people because the 2,000 SUNY kids weren't counted, so they've got an extra 2,500 people. They'll get the federal aid when they come for that, I guess.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. And this is district-specific. Colleagues, if you have a specific question, you can direct it to this
gentleman. We will correct this handout.
All right.
Make it a little clearer and set it back up through what's out.
But again, I can't stress enough to the administration how important it is for us to get these things ahead of time for the review of our staff. A motion is in order at this point.
Gentlemen, on discussion.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. We're just joined with Public Works.
most of the questions I had for this morning have been asked already. But, John, I just have... what is in place for, we have several hundred shelters, with respect to the maintenance that is done by this company, what do we have in place that kind of follows up on the type of job they're doing, maintaining shelters? I know this was an issue once here in the city of White Plains.
Two ways. Staff, maintenance staff, inspect shelters about once a month. They inspect the shelters. Clear Channel inspects them once a week on Mondays, today, for broken glass, dirtiness, and so forth. The shelters are further inspected at night, once every 2 months, for illumination. Virtually all the shelters are illuminated. There's only one or two that are not illuminated for technical reasons. And that's also in the best, in Clear Channel's best interest because of the sale of the advertised to have illuminated at night. So there's a couple of things that double check on each other.
Okay. And the final item, when we deliver a site to them, I noticed that you know, in recent years, a number of our sites now kind of come with a slab. And we're responsible for the installation of the slab. Because quite honestly, most of the communities I've been aware of over the years have been very agreeable in working with us on site selection. The only time there was an issue in certain neighborhoods was when word went out that there would be a slab laid in. And of course, it made better sense to put the slab in, and eventually most of the neighborhoods agreed. But when we deliver a site to Clear Channel, it's a site where if there's a slab on the site, we're responsible for that. Yeah. It's just the erection of the metal shelter that they're responsible for.
Typically what we do is we bring in the power. We bring the electrical connection. We build the slab. We actually bring the conduit right up through the right into the shelter. We actually sometimes install the anchor bolts, and then all they do is they come in, drop the shelter, bolt it on, pull it, and make the connection. So this way we know where the shelter is, where it's facing. And we have control over exactly where it's built so that we make sure we don't have issues with people's property lines. We usually have my survey party stake it out to ensure that we, in fact, are on public right of way.
Okay, very good. All right, like I said before, most of the questions I have already
answered. Just one quick question, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
On this schedule that you have attached to the, that gives the breakdown, the quarterly revenue breakdown, is it $3,875,000? Is it total revenue, or is that you have it in two breakdowns?
There, it is a project year. The project year runs from April 1st to March 31st, so it transcends two budgets.
Okay, so that's the total revenues over the contract period is $3 million.
Yeah, and that would be what you see $875,000. That's in 2015-2016.
Okay.
If you come back to
I was saying the total contract price over the 5 year period.
Will be about $3.8 million.
$3.8 million. So that's what I wanted to find out.
And it actually falls the state year. It falls April 1st to March.
Okay, but you have them broken.
The calendar year, right? So you got the prorated.
Right, right. Understood.
9 months, 1 year, 3 months of the fall right here.
Okay. All right. Are there any other questions then? Okay. So on the proposal, we have a. A motion from Public Works Parks.
So
moved. Motion, is there a second?
Second. For budget?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, moved by Mr. Burton and then two ladies at the same time. How do I pick now? Ms. Marcotte is second.
There's no other discussion. All in favor of both committees?
Aye.
Opposed? It is items reported to the floor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The second item on the agenda in this joint meeting of Public Works, Parks, Labor, Transportation, and Budget is a proposed act that would establish the Playland Spectator admission fee, which is one of the admission fees in the overall menu of fees that apply when people go to Playland, to visit Playland. This is what's called the spectator admission fee. And in front of us is a proposed act that would basically recognize that this board is not looking to increase fees at Playland in the upcoming season for a wide variety of reasons, starting with the economy and... we've had a long discussion about the types of things that we want to try to do in recognition of the burden that is on the shoulders of people in Westchester for property taxpayers and others. So anyway, the Playland discussion has addressed the larger question of the admissions policy there. And we know that basically Playland is going to look the same in 2011 as it did in 2010 with respect to its operation and its fee structure. But this one fee was scheduled to be changed in 2011. So what's on the table before you, limited to this one fee, is this act that would keep the fees at the 2010 level. There would be no increase paid by our residents and non-residents under this. So this is how it's presented. And it's a very short act. It's a very short committee report. In the time I've been speaking, you've had a chance to read through it, I'm sure. So anyway, I would open the floor at this point for discussion of what is being proposed or any modifications to what is being proposed. Mr. Burton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Has there been an explanation as to why the fee was increased? I can understand the interest in revenue, but is there anything beyond that?
Based on the notes that I took, it was a component of a larger revenue plan, and at the time it was just presented as something that would enhance that overall bottom line of that package. But
we don't have any understanding of any marketing sense. It seems to me that the difficulty with doing this is that the disincentive to go just as a spectator, particularly if, let's say, the kids are in the kiddie park with someone else, and you don't need to be there with them, so it's just that much the less money you'd have to spend. I'm just wondering if there was any research or any logic that you're aware of that had been brought forth about this.
No, not to my knowledge.
As a matter of fact, most legislators have objected to this. And if we could, we would have left it free access, like it was in the past. So at the very least, what is being suggested to both committees is that we keep it at last year's levels to minimize the potential damage of access to the park for a person that just wants to come and enjoy a day within the area. We have Ms. Myers and then Mr. Jenkins.
Yeah, I would just like to underscore the importance of this, thanks to the Commissioner of Parks and Recreation, given I represent a lot of people who live very close by Playland and do like to walk through and are often motivated once inside the park to purchase something, purchase food, beverage, perhaps go on a ride. And this, in the past year, I have received a great deal of communication from residents of Rye and the surrounding areas saying, you know, this is having to pay up front lessens the likelihood that we're going to go in just to stroll. So I would second your potential motion.
Mr. Jenkins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And first, I want to thank both you and the Chairman of Public Works Parks and Transportation, Bill Ryan, for working so diligently through this. This is not the first day this particular item has come up. Mr. Ryan has been, and you have as well, has been a tireless advocate for the things that are going on at Playland. But specifically in this case, I think that it cannot be highlighted enough that since we have this ongoing RFP process that is going on at Playland, that if we are changing, or if there is a proposal in the budget that is going to change that level of financing, that is a variable that if we can control it, we should, to make sure that at the end when this process is completed that we will have in front of the board an apples-to-apples comparison that will allow us to make a decision that's in the best interest of Westchester County. Doing something that would be doubling the amount of fees, I believe that we did get the numbers for the spectator fee alone for the people that were at non-Westchester residents. I mean, it was a significant number of people, almost $400,000 worth of revenue that came in with the $5 of non-resident fee. We wouldn't want to do anything, as was pointed out in the committee report, that could negatively impact the attendance and certainly impact the county's bottom line. So I think that this is something that's consistent with that. It's keeping the revenue level at the 2010 levels. And as we did, by the way, for many of the nonprofit organizations, et cetera, to keep them at a flat level and to be able to move forward. So I think that this is something that makes financial sense for us to consider and make these changes.
Ms. Marcotte.
Thank you. Forgive me for the questions. Historically, because I don't know, when was the last time we raised prices at Playland?
Last year was zero to three.
So you could always walk in, you could stroll around and not pay anything, then we went from 3 to 5. Has Parks Department come in and sat down with us? And I mean, is this something that they're giving their blessing? Are they okay with this?
This is a directive that this board gave them and insisted on that there was no reaction. We objected to the increase of budget time, but there's always, we have the bottom line. We have a number that we, you know, but never telling the committee how they were going to achieve the number other than almost doubling the fees. You want to say something to that point?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mm-hmm. In the committee report, we did identify here clearly that the Parks Recreation, Section 134 is out 51, Section 5, Subsection 5 of the laws of Westchester County, commonly referred to as the county charter, does give the Parks Recreation and Conservation Board, Parks Board, the power to approve all matters having to do with the regulation, use, and fees. However, there is an additional section in that specifically for Playland, which basically says with the exception of Playland Park, right? So that is clear that this board would have the ability to deal with that. During the budget process, the commissioner did tell us that the total number of amount of revenue that they expected for the gate fee was $1.2 million, which included all of the increases. So they did tell us that during the budget process.
Yeah.
Obviously, they went up, and just for a quick clarification, it was from $5 for the non-resident fee and doubled it to $10, right? So prior to that, it was zero for everyone. So it was $3 for Westchester residents and $5 for non-Westchester residents. For spectator only,
right?
So then the proposal that the county, that the project in the budget submission was to double it from 5 to 10. And if we utilize the same logic that the PRC, Parks and Recreation Conservation, did with the golf fees, when we were talking through that, that said that if we were to increase the golf fees, which we did propose in the initial set of budget, which we reversed, but it said that that was going to negatively impact the people playing in rounds of golf, right? Well, then that would be the sense of consistent logic to utilize in this to say, let's keep those fees the same so that, you know, when we get to the RFP process, that we'll be able to now have an apples-to-apples comparison, although we can't really control the weather. We can't control this. So okay.
I don't know if I agree with that analogy. Only because golfers tend to they're repeat visitors, if you will. They're going to go back over and over and over again. So a substantial increase of $2 may be a deterrent. But this, I think, often you're speaking of sort of semi-unique visitors. You're not going to Playland every day, where your diehard golfer might go every day and golf. I mean, we all know people that do that. So anyway, so we're doing this against, I guess, the better recommendations of Parks Department, and then my next question would be, have we spoken with budget in terms of what the financial impact might be?
Let me...
I mean, I just don't feel like I have enough information to make that.
And I understand that. I think that you have to put it in the bigger context of what has happened over the past, like, 2 to 3 years. Mm-hmm. We were under one admissions procedure, admissions policy, for years and years and years. In fact, there was one that basically say that visitors to the park go into the park, and then you decide what it is that you'd like to do. What do you want to eat? What do you want to drink? What do you want to ride on? And there are ways of doing that in a very efficient way in a system where you had necessary safeguards in place with respect to the fact that it's a cash, you know, it's people paying cash and getting rides and activities and food and the like. But anyway, what I mean by putting into context, there was a change in the system, in the policy a few years ago. And the board was willing to go along with the change. And we tried it for a year. And then we tried it for another year. And the incident with that was the, we all remember the capital project of the fence. And you had to kind of look at what was going on in Playland with the backdrop being look at what was going on in the industry. At the same time, we're feeling the effects of the recession, and there was a lot of people shooting from the hip that everybody is having a difficult time. But when you actually went to industry statistics about parks, large and small in this country, most of them were holding the line. The only park that dropped off the cliff was Playland. And it happened to be simultaneous with the change in the admissions policy. But anyway, we went through the first year, we went through the second year, and I'm not asking anybody else to be responsible for this statement, but I will make it again. As chairman of this committee, I stated back in December that this was a failed policy. All right? Wasn't pointing a finger at any administration, any individuals. My conclusion that this was a failed policy.
The gate.
The admissions policy had the gate. Only because me and 16 other legislators had talked from time to time, and it was all anecdotal, but we had talked from time to time about people who said that they were very unhappy with the gate at Playland. They didn't like to go under the current system where they had to pay out a lot of money. I remember the fellow in North White Plains, him, his wife, and four kids. They paid well over, I guess, $130, $140 at the gate, and now found themselves inside with that money already spent. He preferred to have a setup where he could go inside the park and then decide over the next 4 hours if we stay that long, because we may not be able to stay that long. But the point is, now we're here, we will decide what rides we're going to go on, what we're going to spend on hamburgers, Pepsis, whatever. And that's the way he wanted it. Even after he recognized that what he would spend that way might have been more than what he spent at the gate. And I ran into it, and 16 other legislators on this board all had their own individual stories about people talking about Playland. So my statement back in December was, in my view, this was a failed policy. It had to be changed. We had to go into 2011 with a new policy at the gate that would give us a chance to recapture people who were now making the decision, I'm not going to Playland anymore. I don't like the admissions policy. So anyway, that was the start of your very good question. Have we talked to parks? We talked to parks in this room back in December. Then we talked to the administration in January about our concern that Playland, the opening was racing closer and closer. This needed to change. And it was our hope, and we had discussed it among ourselves, you know, from time to time, small groups, our committee. We had discussed the better step of making the change to go back to a system that worked. And there was a reason why it worked for so many years. Go back to that system. Parks, no, it's no secret, Parks was not really agreeable to that. The administration was not agreeable to that. We then had a number of other meetings in this room, where maybe at least two that I can remember, possibly this last one was the third, where we talked to Parks about what is it that you're doing? Are you bringing back the new ideas to us? When is it coming? We've had the Parks Commissioner on that screen say that she wasn't wedded to the current system. All right, I'll repeat that. She has said she's not wedded to the current admission system. But we all understand that the revenue number in the budget for Playland as a cost center is constructed around a very formal system that estimates who's going to come down to Playland and what they're going to be charged at the gate. And part of that construction is the spectator fee. So I got to tell you, in this room, had you been present for the the meetings, there were two afternoons where every single member of this Parks Committee, Mr. Rogowski, Mr. Alvarado, Ms. Williams, Judy, every single member here, Mr. Burroughs, every single member said, you need to change this. It is going to result in a third failed season of declining attendance. All right, I should say a third season of declining attendance, not a failed season, a season of declining attendance. But we were getting closer and closer, and once again, Parks and the administration did not care to do that. So, what has survived? Well, we took a look at one particular item and the entire package. That was spectator fee. And we said, well, wait a minute. If the fee structure, if the policy isn't going to change, one of these fees is slated to be increased. And in the period of the recession and gas prices going up and all the rest of it, why don't we at least keep the spectator fee at the 2010 level? Why don't we at least do that? Now, is it a big item? It isn't a $100,000 item per head. You know, it's not a big contract. It's just saying, instead of paying $5 county resident, you'll pay $3 like you did in 2010. It's offered as a starting point because you're probably going to hear in a minute from perhaps some people who feel that there shouldn't be a spectator fee in the first place. Once they get inside the park, they're going to buy some food. They may, in fact, buy some tickets. So not to belabor, but that puts it in the kind of a context. You're right. There is a disagreement. All right? It's not fatal to our relationship with the ninth floor and the park, but there is a disagreement. And we still, and I will just simply say, I won't put anybody else out on this limb, I will simply say that I think one of the problems with Playland attendance, perhaps the major problem, recession notwithstanding, is this admissions policy that's in place now that happens to coincide with two seasons of really drastic reductions in attendance.
And bad weather.
There was bad weather, but then it was followed by a season with great weather.
Bad weather.
All right. The first season was bad weather. The attendance was down. The second season was great weather. The attendance was down. People who we talk to, once again, the anecdotes, they're not saying, oh, Mr. Ryan, County Legislator Ryan, I'm not going to Playland anymore because every single time I go to Playland, it rains. They're not saying that. They're saying, I don't know whether I'm going to Playland anymore because the last time I went, it cost me $140 at the gate before I got inside and rode on my first ride or ate my first hamburger. And there are enough of them out there that caused great concern on our part. But, once again, the clock is running. The opening day is Saturday. And the thinking is maybe there's this one fee that we kind of keep at last year's level rather than have the consumer face yet another item on a laundry list of things that's taking more and more money out of their pockets.
Okay, just one more question, Mr. Chairman. Again, just the question is, do we know what the financial impact is? Has anyone sat down to crunch these numbers? I mean, and what assumptions are we making? Are we making the assumptions that because we do this, attendance might stay flat? Or do we sort of follow the trend that they're going to maybe possibly fall off a little bit? So I'm just, you know, from a numbers perspective.
Our hope in the administration's view is that attendance will improve in the coming season. Nobody knows whether it will or won't, but certainly our hope and their view is that it will improve. When we presented the spectator fee, we isolated on the spectator fee a number of weeks ago, the number of 1.2 million was attached to it. In other words, the initial discussion in December in front of this room, Budget Committee, and then the discussions during the spring, and then the most recent discussion, they have kept the headcount the same for all three discussions. And as you adjust the rate per head, they see a reduction of 1.2 million. I don't know whether or not our budget people
based
have independently confirmed that.
Based on this.
Mm-hmm. No. Based on an ongoing recognition that the spectator headcount will be a certain amount, number, and the fee will drop from $5 to $3 and from $10 to $5 on resident and non-resident.
We have the number.
Right.
There's a little chart that's
been... Trying to make sure we have, I don't know why we don't have our funds.
There was a chart that I saw.
Right, we have a chart of the number of spectators that came in 2010, right, of the county residents and non-residents, and just doing it from the top of my head, hopefully I'm going to get the number right now, is that out of the $1.2 million of revenue they projected, about $500,000 of that would be due to these new fees, these increased fees. So the majority of the people being from outside of Westchester County, I want to say 100,000 or so being inside Westchester. So rounding off, $100,000 from Westchester County residents on a $2 fee increase, and you know, $400,000 for the $5 fee increase for those remaining people, for the people outside.
So the numbers stay the same as
it is. And the numbers stay, right, so the numbers stay the same.
Making that assumption.
Making the assumption, correct.
The financial impact will be $500,000.
Correct, that we would not get it.
We would not receive it.
Right. Now, the opposite side of that, which is the issue that Mr. Ryan has been bringing up and all of us have been talking through, is that if we increase the fees, then you're going to drive people not coming as well. So you can lose it either way, right? So there's no guarantees in the numbers, which is kind of what the right. And just to clarify really quick again, is that there's many people that reported to most members of the committee and having the privilege of sitting in the Public Works, Parks, Labor, and Transportation chair as the chair of Parks for a while. We heard from people that actually do that. They take their grandchildren up to Playland. They don't get on a ride at all.
And they
do it three or four times a year, especially the ones that are even closer to Playland. One's on maybe on our side of the Yonkers and that kind of thing. The kids do that more, the teenagers, right? But there's people that are around the area that take their children there for 2 hours, or grandkids there for 2 hours, and go. So the point Mr. Ryan was making, when there was no gate, right? You just walked in and got on a bunch of rides, you know, you get grandchildren, and the next thing you know, grandma and grandpa spending, you know, $200 before they knew it. That's one of the questions that there's no quantification for, but that was an assertion that was being made to us.
And then just one more question. All right, so this apparently has been an ongoing conversation and sort of a school of thought by everybody sitting, and I really don't have enough information to whatever, but I'm just curious why this wasn't done during the budget process. Why would you not have then deleted the revenue on release day? Why now?
We attempted. They continued to say that this was the way that they were. The parks.
Do your own thing on delete day. It doesn't matter. I mean, you're doing it now despite what they told you or recommended to you. I'm just curious as to why this wasn't done on delete day. Why wouldn't you have whacked it in the budget?
We have attempted. There has been a total objection on part of the recommendation of the legislature, and that's what it's come down to.
Mr. Ryan, as chairman of Public Works, Parks and Labor, had suggested to Ms. Marcotte's question, had suggested through this process that in January they've been having this discussion, and the commissioner herself has stated that she's not wedded to this policy. It's been an ongoing process in trying to have a level of discussion about that. So you could do it. You could do it in budget during the budget process. But what we actually decided to do as a group was to try to work with the administration on this particular item and try to show specifically with the RFP process that we were trying to be considerate of an approach that said, let's look and see what new things could happen, right? And then trying to come up with a formula to make sure that we're trying to keep as many variables the same, because, again, we can't control the weather or anything, so.
Thank you.
I have it, sir, I guess.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, this there's a lot of ways to talk about this. You know, the numbers, the concessionaire numbers. I mean, the administration, to be fair to the administration, we've had a lot of conversations. It's been pointed out that, at least partly due to the input from the board, revenues from the concessionaires have been driven down because they've made the argument that there aren't enough, as many people there. So the administration said there's already a reduction, a potential loss of revenue. Not a potential. We're going to get less money. So from the budget, at the point we're down, to change these fees would be an additional reduction of revenues. The message that I got from the administration was, and certainly the Commissioner Parks would be willing to have a different attendance fee schedule, but money is money. And there's the budget. And the message I thought to this board was, if we're prepared to at least share in the responsibility of what is going to be the final revenue number, and if revenue numbers are down, if we're all prepared to share in that number come the end of the year, it may be something to look at. But we've really, honestly, we've never gotten to a decision point that we're prepared to do that. There is, to your point, there is no fiscal impact associated with this act, and I'm not sure, you know, we usually ask for fiscal impacts. This one should have it. So the administration gave us numbers, but they didn't, in their, I think, inflating the number, they I think, assumed no change of attendance. We're going to double the fees, but they didn't give us that marketing analysis when you raise subway fares, riders go down. As you raise ridership, everything goes down. We didn't get the analysis. They came up with a lost revenue number, but what was the attendance number based on? So we didn't get that part of that. But clearly, revenues would go down if you lower the rentals to the concessions and if you reduce the fees, unless you know a lot more people come, which is our hope, but we don't know that. But frankly, so there's no fiscal impact. We are amending the budget, to your point, to that extent. I think we need to take responsibility, which we've been asked, I think, informally, if not formally, from the administration, if you want to change this number, be prepared to take responsibility. I'll say it again, the budget that we passed showed a profit for Playland before EBITDA, and you go through the accounting, but you take out amortization payments and you include the interest payments. Playland, in fact, according to the budget that we passed, will make money this year. Now, maybe some of that profit is those fees we raise. I, for one, am not happy, and Mr. Ryan pointed out the failures of this, and the numbers speak for themselves, the attendance. I would be more comfortable, I don't know if I'll make an emotion at this point, but I would like to have some discussion instead of going from three to five to 5 to 10. As Chairman Jenkins pointed out, more than a majority of people go to Playland from outside the county. I don't really understand when we have, not to pick on Glen Island Park, we were told a couple years ago that's $20 per capita, Saxonwoods Park. Our parks cost money. People pay taxes. They like living in Westchester for our park system. Parks cost money. Our budget calls for Playland not to cost money, in fact. It's going to make money. So it seems to me, why are we taxing, if you will, charging our constituents? Instead, I would be more comfortable with zero fee for the 30-35% of the folks who are our people, our constituents, who are paying taxes, and the 65% of the folks who come outside the county, let them pay the five. I'm not saying it has to go. I would be more comfortable with zero and five. That has a financial impact. This budget committee, this board, we really haven't addressed it in details. To your point, again, what's the fiscal impact? But I would be prepared to, for me personally, take on that fiscal impact and hope that we'll do better in attendance. But if we don't, we need to understand, as Commissioner Stout over the years used to come and roll his pennies on the table, Playland cost us 6 cents per capita, 8 cents per capita, where the other parks in this county cost us dollars and dollars and tens of dollars per capita. We have to bite the bullet, and I agree with Mr. Ryan, it'd be great to do it before Playland started. If we didn't do this till July, I mean, to me, I'm not sure it makes much difference. It's better to do it at the beginning. I would support 0 and 3 because the file policy didn't work. And I have a little difficulty voting for an act that just puts it back to last year, where many of us recognized was not a good thing. So if we're going to take the step and cut back on some revenues, why are we necessarily going back to, as Mr. Ryan said, the failed approach for the last 2 years? I'd be more comfortable, at least to our residents, zero. So that's my feeling. I won't make a motion. I'd like to get more discussion. I certainly heard enough information from my constituents that I would go in and buy a hot dog, but for the $3, it's a cold spot, I don't go in. So why are we challenging and taxing our folks, our residents? So if we're going to make a change, I think we should go all the way and go not to 3, but to 0 for our folks. But that's just me. But the fiscal impact, it's not discussed here. We have to be prepared. It's just quickly vote on something. There is a fiscal impact. If weather doesn't come out right, and we need to, I haven't heard that this committee, the budget committee, or our board is prepared, which is the message I got from the administration. You want to take that and be prepared for it? Fine, we'll work with you. We haven't necessarily formally sent that message back to the administration, so there is no working on it because we've never quite sent, and that may be by this act, we will be sending a message. But I, for one, would prefer to vote for a zero fee as opposed to a $3 fee.
Okay.
Thank you. Mr. Jenkins, in response, I had on first. I have you, but on this point,
sure. The numbers again. I mean, this is just math here. So the 83,000 in 2010, 83,422 people comes out to be times five is $417,110. Right. So that's, and for the spectator, the resident spectator is $189,669. At $3 a person. So if Mr. Rogowski's suggestion is that we modify it to go back to the 2010 rate for the non-resident and to make it zero for the county residents since they're already paying for this particular thing anyway, then that certainly sounds like a reasonable recommendation, and I would second Mr. Rogowski's motion if he so had made it such.
Well, with the chairman's prodding, I'll be happy to make a motion.
All right, so we are amending this for both committees.
I would just say the committee needs to understand that may be impacting our budget, and as long as we're, prepared, I'm prepared to do it, but I think we all need to understand.
All right, so you made the motion second by Mr. Jenkins. For residents, county residents only.
Motion zero and five.
And zero $5
and five. All right, we're going to move forward. You have the lead on the discussion. Chairman, do you want to take it?
Well, we can continue with the discussion, but we have a proposal in front of us for discussion purposes. We have a motion now and a second. They happen to sit on both committees, so yep. We can take it from both committees.
Yes.
If we're going to move forward, let's dispose of this motion and second. All in favor of the amended version? Okay. On discussion.
One question here. If you look at the attendance record, it suggests that the attendance really falls off in those categories that you call five ride sampler and group rider. Where does it fall? Is that residents or non-residents?
It really has no bearing because they're going to acquire it regardless.
We're not changing the ticket price.
So in other words, these categories are
purchasing tickets.
Purchasing tickets. Yeah.
Those who purchase these types of tickets. So in other words, you're saying that this item will not change.
Those are like gimmick programs.
The gimmick programs. Okay.
Like the stimulus. Yeah. Stimulus value for
so why
$25?
I guess my question then is that how could that be added in then as total attendance? Because if that is the case, then it would have been included above in either the resident or non-resident category, and it's not an attendance count.
They were right? Opting to buy something. They were going in beyond just the spectator. I'm going in to walk around. They were opting to buy one of the products. One of the products was the five ride sampler.
Right.
That's a cut above just spectator, and the other was the stimulus package, as a benefit to hard pressed people going through the recession. This was a stimulus, so they were buying a product as well.
So in Mr. Rogowski and Mr. Jenkins's motion, you wouldn't be able to tell what impact. Charging residents zero and charging non-residents $5 would be, unless you know who these individuals are.
Are they already counted?
They're identified as spectators.
The last two categories of the two top spectators.
Are they just spectators?
They're not buying tickets.
Okay, so basically, so you would go on the 256, right. The 2010, and the 163.
Right.
That's what you're saying.
Right. Well, the 63,000
and
the 83,000. Oh, okay. You see, just not the total residents, just the spectator residents.
Oh, okay. Right.
People are buying. We're not affected ticket prices. Some people pay to walk through.
All right.
Parking was reduced. That's $4 or $5. It was reduced down from 6 and 7. I think it's $4 during the week and $5 on the weekends. Per car.
Oh, okay.
That actually was
it's a big
reduced.
Number.
But it was reduced
in the budget.
All right.
Okay, so
it's
legislator,
then it's double. Linda, is that?
Yeah. So in other words, spectators would be only ones that would be charged a specific amount.
Okay. Is there any other discussion before we vote on the amendment to what's proposed?
I'd like to ask you and
Ms. Bernice.
can, what is the charter again say? Because I've been a parks person. I've been on the Yonkers Parks Board even before I became a councilman there. I love parks. I do feel that people come to Westchester County for the parks, the highways, the beauty, the trees, and everything else. And that's why people come here to live, okay? I am for Playland. I have stated this several times, over and over again. I'm here 17 years. You're here a long time, and so are you, okay? We go through the same thing. I don't care who the administration is or what. If you got the votes, you're going to pass something. And you know what? We will see, like you say, next year, who's right or wrong and what's going to happen, you know, regardless. But why couldn't we resurrect a Parks Commission like we had? Ask Milt Hoffman to chair it. He knows more than anybody here and any one of us when it comes to parks and recreation. Put on people that really care about parks and do something. We don't want to open this up. We don't want to discuss it. Okay. What does the charter say? Does the parks board, okay, do they have the right? And we have the right to just say, the hell with you, we don't care what you want. Why do we have a parks board? What is their duty as far as rates?
That was clear.
Everything but Playland.
I think Cameron Jenkins already...
Golf is...
Oh, no,
everything except the charter says every fee for parks is set by the parks board. Except for Playland Park. And part of the reason why, to your point, Ms. Brevin, is that there used to be a Playland Commission.
Yes.
And the Playland Commission would be responsible for those things just for Playland. But that particular commission went out after the failed Marriott experience.
Right.
So that's what I mean, that's part of that one. So that's what it is.
All right.
Simply put, that's the answer.
Yeah. All right. All right, so we have the right to change that.
Yep.
And like you say, if you have the votes and a pass is fine, and we have to wait until next year to see what the... We're shooting crap. Okay, thank you.
Except that is not the hell with the parks board. That's not what we mean there.
Yeah. So.
All right, so on the motion, Chairman Ryan...
So we have no other discussion on this amendment. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. We have the amended item in front of us, right? The amended item?
Yes.
That was just to accept the change on this for our discussion purposes. It doesn't necessarily...
Can you just read it, how it should read in the amended then, the first sentence?
Well, let me see if it's just substituting that easy. Your committee has concluded the Playland spectator admissions fee for 2011
should be lowered. Should be eliminated.
It adds to be easier, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
You have to write it up.
You're going to have to write it because it does. The sentence structure does change here.
Yep.
All right. The spectator fee. Okay. Spectator admissions fee for 2011 shall be maintained at its 2000. So this sentence has to be reconstructed.
Right.
That shall be zero.
Should be zero.
For residents.
For residents.
Right. And $5 for non-residents. Okay, so we're going zero residents, $5 non-residents.
Right.
Okay. Can I just ask you something?
Sure.
In other words, an analysis, how many people were residents? Do we have any idea on how many people were?
Yeah,
we're in front of you.
It's basically 63,000 in 2010 would fall into the category where their fee now would not be $3. It would be zero.
And the remainder would be times five.
The remainder would be 83,004, if that number holds up. 83,004, and that's at $5 a head. So that revenue would stay.
The net effect is about 23,000 loss of revenues, assuming no growth in attendance.
Yeah.
Right.
So, Mr. Chairman, the language, it's the spectator fee for 2011. So next year we would have
to revisit
this through the budget. Right. So for 2011, this is the new chart.
And incidentally, the chart that people are working with this morning happens to be the 2010 year-to-date actual numbers as provided by the Clayland. During our discussion on the budget back in December, part of the discussion with the Parks Commissioner and her staff people was, do you expect that the 2000 numbers are the numbers that we are going to see in 2011? If you remember, the number was somewhere, I think it was aggregated in the amount of maybe 493,000, maybe, something like that, 495. Their point in that discussion was, no, they're projecting a higher level. They had us up over 600,000. So I don't, you know, obviously, if we had their worksheets in front of us, we could actually see what kind of spectator, non-resident, spectator-resident growth they anticipated. It's logical to assume, I guess, that they expected some growth in both categories. So. But anyway, once again, all of that was just projections.
Okay.
Okay.
This is the revised.
All right, so we have, this is what now?
That's the amended version.
Oh, do we report it?
Yeah.
No, there it goes.
Okay, so we have section one, the spectator admission fee for 2011 shall be eliminated in the case of residents of the County of Westchester and maintained at its 2010 level of $5 in the case of non-residents. That's the very simple one section. One section that deals with the issue on the table this morning. This is now what's under discussion. Are there any other comments concerning what's being proposed?
Other comments? Sure. I would just like to say that based on all of the feedback that I've gotten from residents who live in my district, this would be very much welcomed because they honestly did feel that having to pay at the gate kept them away.
Is that a motion for both committees?
Sure.
Okay.
Yes.
The motion's on.
I think it's been on.
No. We already voted on your motion.
Right.
Yeah.
We've changed the document that was taken in.
Yes.
This was taken in under the authority of the two chairmen.
Yes.
This was taken in this morning. Its form now changed through an amendment that was agreed to. Now it's on the table. It's amended form. We're on discussion. Judy just made a very good point. Are there any other points before we call for a vote to report this amended document out to the floor? Mary Jane.
I just wanted to add that in my family's experience, the kids are getting a little older now, but we generally take the kids over to Playland a few times during the summer, and it's the kind of place where we always looked at it as a place where you take the kids for a couple hours when you have a little bit of time and they're in the mood. It's not the kind of place that could sustain a model of a lot of upfront fees as if it were Six Flags or something like that. It's not that kind of place. It wasn't meant to be that kind of place. It was meant to be a park with extra amenities for our people to enjoy. And I think that the amended version is much more in keeping with the spirit of what this park was meant to be. And I think it will do no worse as an economic model than what was proposed by the administration, because that business model does not work for the kind of park it is.
Other discussion?
Yeah, and I actually, as Ms. Myers commented, I asked if she would make the motion for both committees, and she agreed.
A motion would be in order, then. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so moved.
A motion to move this. Is there a second?
For parks.
Second for park, and I guess Mr. Rogowski for budget.
Call the Rogowski rule again.
Yeah.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. That concludes the business that the two committees have jointly this morning. I'd entertain a motion for Public Works Parks.
So move it.
Labor Transportation adjourned. We have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
We have a second. All in favor?
Aye.
This meeting is now adjourned. Thank you very much.
Don't forget to sign the legislation.
Right. Thank you.